Welcome to Korean Context, a behind-the-scenes conversation with the scholars, artists, and opinion makers who bridge our two worlds. This podcast is brought to you by the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C. I'm Martha Legutsky, and I'll be your host today. Today's episode features a conversation with a visitor from afar. Dr. Alon Lefkowitz comes to us from Israel, where he currently teaches at Hebrew University of Jerusalem. Dr. Lefkowitz is one of a very small contingent of scholars on Korean-Middle Eastern relations. Since he finished his doctoral studies in 2004, he's taught at Hebrew University, Tel Aviv University, and even Hanyang University in Seoul. On August 4th, Dr. Lefkowitz presented his paper, titled The Republic of Korea and the Middle East, Economics, Diplomacy, and Security, in front of a packed room at the KEI conference facility. The interview you're about to hear is conducted in the immediate aftermath of the event, when we whisked Dr. Lefkowitz away to ask him a few questions of our own. Speaking with him about Israel-ROK relations is Nicole Finneman, KEI's Director of Research and Academic Affairs. Dr. Lefkowitz, once again, thank you so much for joining us here. Not only today, but in Washington, you've had to travel quite far. If you wouldn't mind telling our listeners a little bit about yourself and where your interest in Korea comes from.
My interest in Korea started at the end of my bachelor studies. I had to write a seminar paper about Korea, and Korea was an excellent case study to write about. And since then, I've been hooked to Korea, and I've been trying to study as much as I can about Korea and to do research on Korean relation with Israel, Middle East, security issues, etc.
Have you spent any time in South Korea?
Yeah, I spent a few times in. I've been a few times in Korea, thanks to the Korea Foundation. I was at Yonsei University as a fellow, one full time, studying about Korea. It was an interesting time in Korea in those days. It was the Korean economic crisis, which meant that. At the beginning, I got $1,500 to spend in Korea, and when I entered Korea, it was worth $700 because of the economic crisis, but it was fun.
I can't imagine that there are many scholars in Israel who focus or study Korea.
You're absolutely right. In the Asian studies departments, most of the scholars are specialized in Japan or in China. In the last few years, we have new scholars who specialize in India. Korea, let's say there are about 2 to 3.5 scholars who work in Korea because Korea is not that important for Israeli Academy. But now it's starting to get, the number of students are increasing. And the big question is money. If the Korea Foundation gives money, donates money, and the government, the government gives more money, it will help to increase the number of scholars that will specialize in Korea.
Why is the interest in Korea growing now, ever so slightly, but what's behind that?
The interest in Korea, because first of all, since the 90s, until the 90s, Korea trade with Israel was very limited. People didn't know that Korea was divided. They didn't see any Koreans. And since then, since the 90s, more and more Korean merchandise, Korean cars, Korean electronics. Today, Korean cellular phones are sold on every corner. I would say it started in the Korean Olympics in 1988 and the 2002 football FIFA Japan-Korea, and people started to find out that there's another state called South Korea, and more, as I said, Korean, the Hallyu, the Korean soap opera. At the beginning, we have it's called the soap opera channel in Seoul, and people are addicted to it. And there's a website called Korean Culture in Seoul. It is run by kids and adults that are addicted to Korean soap opera. And the funny a funny thing, I wouldn't say funny thing, but that they go to Korea and they're looking for the all the scenes were on the stairs of Samsung. Now, since I think last year, there are direct flights from Israel to Korea. Until now, you had to fly through Europe or through Jordan.
That's really interesting. Do you think the impetus for the direct flight creation is primarily business?
Primarily business, because there's an increase in trade between Israel in Korea in the last year or two was almost $2 billion.
Mm.
And there was pressure by Christian Korean that wanted to fly directly to Israel, and for many years they tried to convince Korean Airlines to open a direct flight, and there are about 40,000 Korean Christians are flying each year to the state of Israel and to Egypt, Jordan, the holy places in the Middle East. They opened the flights a few years ago, and then it didn't work out. But last year, for the first time, there's a direct flight. It's a direct flight, which is half passenger and half merchandise, cargo. And it's been working since then.
Well, on the people-to-people level, it sounds like Israel-ROK relations are certainly growing, and they're on the up. On the governmental level, how would you describe relations today?
On the government level, it's improving. I'm not the government, but the Israeli government is negotiating with the South Korean government an FTA, Free Trade Economic Agreement. It is now being evaluated by both states. It's been said that in the next few months the evaluation will end, and then they will have to re-evaluate if they want to pursue FTA with Israel. Plus, there are cooperation, technology cooperation between both states. Some of the chaebols opened branches in Israel to buy technology which is being produced by Israel. Israel is one of the leading nations in high-tech technology, and a number of patents, technological patents registered. Israel is number one or two on the globe, per person.
Very interesting. Now, the most recent government-to-government interaction took place not too long ago, a visit to Korea?
Yes. The Israeli president, President Shimon Peres, visited in June 2010. He visited Korea. Now, the question was, would he visit Korea or not, or would he cancel the visit because of the flotilla incident to Gaza? Korea tried to tell the Israelis to reconsider, but Israel decided to move on. And the visit was downgraded from a state visit to a working visit. And as I said, it was like a state visit without the outfit. The only thing that didn't occur was the president was supposed to get a PhD from Korea University, Seoul National University, and this ceremony was cancelled. But all the meetings were the same as before the flotilla.
Okay.
Just the outfit wasn't a state visit, but the president met with the President Shimon Peres went with President Bimon Bak, and I spoke to Korean side and the Israeli side, and said it was an excellent visit, even if the issue of the flotilla was wrong.
Will South Korea's actions with regards to Iran moving forward, whether or not it upholds sanctions, for example, because of Iran's nuclear program, will that have an effect on ROK-Israel relations?
Well, it depends on what will be the implication of the sanction on Iran. If Iran decides to start a war, or if Iran decides to use its forces in Lebanon or Hezbollah in Lebanon to initiate a war, it might affect the trade with the ROK, because Korea might feel that it's a very problematic time to trade with Israel. The question is, what will happen if a war will start? What will happen with the Korean forces in southern Lebanon? Will they be affected or injured? But for the time being, it seems as if there's no direct influence between the sanction on Iran and the trade between Israel and South Korea. For the time being, it might change.
I wonder if you have any thoughts on whether or not South Korea has integrated its policy on these countries individually, on Iran, on Syria, on Jordan, on Israel, and even in Northern Africa with Libya, into one comprehensive policy?
Mm-hmm. I would say yes and no, as our president used to say. if you look at the South African Foreign Office website, you will see that the Middle East is a one region. But if you look carefully, you'll see it's a one region divided to sub-regions, to the Iranian region, to the Middle East region, North Africa. You can't have a policy towards the region without understanding the complexity of the region. And the South Korean figured it out that you have to be sensitive. For example, if you trade with one nation, you have to understand that in case of Israel, you have to be very sensitive. You can't trade with it. Until the 90s, you can't trade with Israel and trade with other Arab states. And in the case of the Iran-Iraq war or the case of other incidents, Korea had to be very, very sensitive with whom she trade. That is why, as I mentioned, Korea was able to trade with everyone because it was impartial. He tried to be involved, but not to be involved politically in the political issues. And by doing so, he traded with everyone. Even with Syria, doesn't have any diplomatic relations, but he trades with Syria. Even when North Korea are building nuclear facilities in Syria, South Korea continues to trade with Syria. And this is interesting because South Korea tries to solve the North Korean nuclear issue, but at the same time does not use its trade, its relation with other states to hold the North Korean nuclear or missile cooperation with the Middle East state.
Do you see a rise in South Korea influence?
Yeah. If you look at the United Arab Emirates nuclear energy deal, it's a huge deal. It's a $20 billion. Plus, they're negotiating with Turkey and Jordan to build projects. The Koreans are excellent candidate because they don't have any political agenda. They accept everyone. They are impartial. We're here just for the money, just for the project. We won't try to convert you. Although this the conversion issue is problematic, as you know, in Afghanistan, that Christian Koreans were arrested in Afghanistan. And I think in the next decade or so, the rise of the need of alternative energy, such as the nuclear plant, Korea will be more and more involved in the region. And as I said, if Korean companies, Korean chemicals would develop new purification, water purification technologies, the Middle East needs it. And there's a potential for making billions in the Middle East states. And Korea has a huge advantage in this field. Now, the question is politically. It feels as if from the Korean side, they didn't make the decision they want to be more and more influential politically in the region. And from the Middle Eastern side, they don't evaluate the South Korean as an important player that can influence, or as we say, they can deliver the merchandise. They can convince, they can leverage Israeli side, or they can use leverage versus the Arab side, as the United States has. And so it doesn't look as if Korea will be reborn again as a Middle East superpower. It will be a side player for a long time, which from its own interest, it's better. We're here for just the business, not for being play politics. And the question is, will they intervene in other military peace operations? I think the South Lebanon case is an excellent example. Depends on what happens in the future. If war erupts, I don't think they will come back. But they might get more and more involved in other regions because, if you want to be a middle power player, you have to pay the price and you have to intervene in other places, not just in the Korean Peninsula.
Wow, thank you. This has been such an education for me, for sure, and I know for our listeners as well. So thank you so very much.
And thank you for inviting me and allowing me to have fun in Washington, D.C.
Dr. Lefkowitz's paper was published as part of KEI's Academic Paper Series. At the end of each year, the series is assembled into a bound book called On Korea, which is available for free from the Korea Economic Institute. If you're interested in a copy, just visit our website or feel free to email us at podcast@keia.org. To read Dr. Lefkowitz's paper if you haven't already, or to check out the Academic Paper Series and any other events that KEI hosts, visit our website at www.keia.org. Thanks so much for listening. It was a pleasure to have you, and we look forward to seeing you next time on Korean Context. Bye!